Good afternoon. All right. Good afternoon. Okay, I know it's after lunch, and I'm tired too, but we got to kind of wake up in here a little bit, okay? We came here for a reason. We came for some education. We came to exchange ideas, and that's going to be important. Now, I will invite the people who are in the back that they can come up a little closer. It's all right. I don't have the H1N1. It's going to be okay. I will say to you that I have to come down here because I learned public speaking at an early age from the church. And because of that, you know, I guess people always call me a ministering preacher or speaker. So in the event as I'm talking to you, you feel like you need to say amen or hallelujah, you can do that. But I'm asked that you hold your questions to the end, all right? Before I start, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge some of my staff who are here and the folks who help and assist us from the state of Maryland and from the Baltimore County Health Department. Could you guys just stand up? Mesra, please stand up, you guys. Just come on. It's all right. Thank you, guys, because what I'm about to talk about is something that I obviously did not do on my own. Can I just ask, Aisha, would you mind doing the slides, or should I call? Okay, that's. I will. We're going to talk about mobilizing non-traditional immunization partners in a pandemic response. And what we're going to talk about today is not the usual folks that we would tend to go to. We're going to talk about some of the, I hate to use this word, unusual, but the non-traditional folks that we've done. And we're going to give you an example of what happened in Baltimore County. Next slide. Okay, overview, preparing for a pandemic response, what we've done to prepare for it, extraordinarily important when you're talking about non-traditional partners. The benefits of the non-traditional partnerships, contributions of traditional and non-traditional partners, some of our stats, mobilizing non-traditional partners, and this is the key that we're going to bring home to you, the ideal situation, success and challenges and lessons learned. Next slide. Just to let you know about Baltimore County in Maryland, we have approximately 785,000 folks, and approximately 25% are African American. And many people were talking this week about how it was very difficult to get the African American population to get the H1N1 vaccine. We found the same thing. As of December 31st, we recognized that of all the vaccine that we gave out, only 10% were to the African American population. We then started a huge media campaign, Stay in the Game and Take the Shot, giving out basketballs, using basketball mascots, and really publicizing to the African American population. And that's not what I'm going to talk about today, but I will say to you that as of April, that number went up to 17.5%. So we were able to do some wonderful things in the African American population. Next slide. Just to let you know about our health department, we have 6 bureaus: administrative services, behavioral health services, which is our substance abuse and our mental health services, clinical services, healthcare access, community health services, and then prevention, protection, and preparedness. I say this to you because that's going to be very, very important as we move on. Next slide. So preparing for a pandemic. The pandemic is coming. We know it's coming, and we have to write all those grants. You know how that goes, right? So you're starting to sit down, and you have to prepare for the pandemic and understanding that. We had to have an H1N1 community health planning summit. We called in all the players, the traditional players around the table, and said, we've got a potential health emergency going on. And we spoke with them, and we got their ideas and thoughts, and we explained to them exactly what our plans were. And then one of the most important things I think you have to do is meeting with the county exec or whoever is in charge of your jurisdiction and the agency heads. Very, very, very important. You've got to have them to buy in to your plan. Next slide. So our theme was all hands on deck. And when you looked at all of our bureaus and you look at all of our agencies, that's exactly what I went out and said. All hands on deck. Irrespective of what you do, I'm going to need your help. And when I talk with you about needing your help, I let you know exactly what I'm going to need from you. You can talk to me about your concerns. Because remember, our non-traditional partners, one, don't believe that they are partners until you tell them. And two, they have concerns also. And you want to alleviate those concerns too. Next slide. So, the benefits of these non-traditional immunization partnerships, you can maximize the use of your resources. You got a lot of folks who are around you who do a lot of things on a daily basis that during a pandemic you would need to have happen. Why would you recreate the wheel? Have them do those things. They have an added expertise, manpower, and material resources. That's why we use them. We introduce and reinforce the non-traditional partner's role in the public health emergency responses. You are my partner. I need you. I need you to get through this crisis. You are an integral part of what we're trying to do. Once you have them buy into that, they can really work very well with you. Next slide. Okay, so we need to convey United Front to the public, and that's obvious. You know how it is when you're in a particular jurisdiction and everybody's saying something different. That does not work. When you are educating your non-traditional partners and all of your partners, what happens is that if you give everybody the same message, then they themselves are going to go out and spread that message for you. So that when you have 785,000 constituents in your jurisdiction, and I've got approximately 40 or 50,000 people who are working in the county government, it's important to have all of those folks understand what's going on with that crisis, because they then become your spokesperson. Provide insight in areas outside of the public health. So therefore, it's important, even though you are public works, and we're going to talk about some of those non-traditional partners, I need to provide insight and let you know how the H1N1 or the particular crisis is going to affect you and your staff. Next slide. So we've had our traditional partners and as the private providers. And remember, I have to say to you that for Baltimore County, when you talk about flu shots, it was the private providers and the pharmacies that traditionally gave the flu shots. It was not the health department. We did not do that for the mass majority of the population, but when it came to the H1N1, we were now tasked to give all those peoples those shots. And that makes a huge difference, because now we're in an area that we're not as comfortable. And for the folks who are our traditional partners, we now have to work with them to really get that shot out. Our community vaccinators, we have to collaborate to educate and vaccinate the community. And then our schools, we work with our schools. In Baltimore County, we have an RN, a nurse, in every one of our schools. And they do a lot of immunizations to a certain degree during a regular flu season. But this was something completely different, and we needed to have them buy into the process to be able to give this additional vaccine, and especially two additional shots for the kids who are under 10 years old. Next slide. So, non-traditional partners. One was our Baltimore County residents. Okay, the first thing that was extraordinarily important is getting the message out about who was in the priority group. Very important message, because when people were coming in for the H1N1, they were saying, I need the H1N1 shot. Where's my shot? I need my shot. Well, you're not in the priority group. What you mean I'm not in the priority group? Now you got somebody who's extraordinarily irate, who's going to leave from you very upset, having stood online, blah, 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 blah. Right? So therefore, we have to get our Baltimore County residents to really partner with us and educate them on how and who was in the priority groups. We had a support of community mitigation measures. We put out a wonderful, wonderful program, which we call the Flu Facts, F-A-C-T-S. Frequently wash your hands is the F. A, always get your flu shot annually. C, cover your cough. T, take time off work or school if you're not feeling well. And S, seek additional medical advice if you don't get better. That was important to be able to work with the community mitigation measures. We had to get that information out, and people were walking around talking about the flu facts. And then we had to sort information through websites and a community connection network. That was a whole nother program that we had in which when H1N1 hit, our phones shut down. Verizon couldn't handle it, our phones couldn't handle it. And so we had to think of a way very, very quickly to be able to get information out to people. And so what we did, we had this community connection network on the website. People came to our website. They were able to register with us. And once they registered with us, we were able to send them information hot off the press. And it became a wonderful thing for Baltimore County because there were others who weren't a part of Baltimore County who was going to register with us because our information was coming out quickly and accurately. And it's a wonderful thing when you get an email as a public person. You get that email and then you hear it on the news later on. So then you feel a little special. You feel as if, well, the health department is giving me this stuff right off the press. And so that was very important. We wanted to give accurate information timely. In addition to that, there were some specific frequently asked questions that rather than trying to call in and wait on a busy line or get dropped off, you can just go to our website and get that information. Next slide. So the community, Department of Community Conservation. Community Conservation, one of the things that they do in Baltimore County is deal with the homeless population. As you guys know, when we first started, they gave us this much, a little smidgen of vaccine. Now, why would you give me a little bit of vaccine? Like, who am I gonna give that vaccine to? Because you know everybody want the vaccine first, right? So in Baltimore County, we had multiple meetings and we talked about this. And what we decided to do when we looked at our flu facts, we said, stay home from work or school if you get sick. And we recognize that there's a population of people that don't have a home. And that was our homeless centers. And we recognize that what good is it going to be to take a child out of school and have them go to a homeless shelter with a bunch of other children. So we really felt that the pregnant women and the children in our homeless center, we really needed to immunize them first and foremost. And we were able to work with community conservation to identify the homeless children and their close contacts and target them for vaccination first. Next slide. The fire department, wonderful, wonderful partner that you would not think that you could potentially utilize. But we've got to, they vaccinated their own staff, which was wonderful. So that was less people that we had to vaccinate. And then they also were able to provide staffing. Once the governor of Maryland said that it is a emergency, a state of emergency, the Secretary of Health was able to say, okay, the fire department EMS staff can also give vaccines. That was wonderful, because when we had our mass clinics, I didn't have enough staff to give those vaccines, but I was able to go to the fire department and say, can you give me some of your men? And they came quickly, and they came proudly, and they came prepared. And they stood side by side, the health department staff, and they gave immunizations out. And then, you know, once the vaccine started coming in, it was a lot. We did not have a place to store it. And if you are in any jurisdiction like mine, you know that you cannot sign a contract in one day. You know that process takes 3 or 4 months. So for me to be able to get a storage spot, that was going to take me some time. However, the fire department was right on time because they already had the storage stuff right there. And they said, you know what, bring it to us and we'll store it for you in the proper way. So we were able to use a non-traditional partner. Next slide. Libraries. Great. Libraries in Baltimore County are in all the different neighborhoods. So it allowed us to use the branches as vaccination sites. That was wonderful. It also helped us to promote our community mitigation measures. And then they hosted many of our emergency preparedness presentations. This was great stuff that we can get very, very quickly. And then we have a mobile unit clinic that we've worked with a different department, an RV, that they were utilizing for a completely different reason. And we were able to say, can we use that to give H1N1 shots out? And they said, of course. So we used it after hours and on the weekends. And so the library was able to host some of those. Next slide. Recreation and Parks. Recreation and Parks has a host of sites and facilities. All of their recreation centers, wonderful gymnasiums, wonderful auditoriums that we were able to use in those particular sites that were county owned. So we reached out to them and they allowed us to use their facilities. They even provided us staff to support our clinics. They set up. Parks and Recreations usually are the ones who come and set the stage up if you need one, or a tent for different programs and things like that. Well, we were doing this in the winter, and we had people who were online. And so people were standing outside. So we had the Parks and Recs, they could set up some tents for us. They could actually put heaters in those tents. And we actually got some coffee and stuff for people so that folks, when they were standing outside, were actually warm. And they also hosted some of our mobile unit clinics. Next slide. Information technology. I mentioned to you that our phones crashed, the computers were going a mess, but they facilitated our H1N1 information hotline and call center. They updated our website with clinic schedules and general information, and we had to obviously put all the content in that. But you know, usually for us, it takes 24 to 48 hours for your website to be updated. By having that initial meeting with the county exec and having the initial meeting with the heads of the departments, including IT, we threw that out the window. They said what the Department of Health needs, give it to them. So we were able to update our things in a matter of less than an hour. That went from 48 hours down to an hour. And then now they're working with us to create an online appointment pre-registration. One of the things that we were trying to do is we had limited amount of vaccine. Everyone wanted a vaccine. And so everyone was calling in. And we said it would be wonderful if we could just have them go to our website and just put their own appointment in. And then they would be registered for their appointment. And we're actually still working on that process right now, and that should be finished within the next month or two. Next slide. So some of our other non-traditional partners is Budget and Finance. That was one of the major, major folks that you gotta go talk to early on. You have to talk to them. The reason why is because everything takes a million years going through Budget and Finance. And so they can expedite those purchases for you. And so by talking to them up front, you can get a lot of things through. Workforce Development, it was their RV. And so they used it, they had computers in those RVs so that they can actually help people get resumes and get jobs. We just kind of basically used the RV for H1N1 vaccines. Public Works, they provided the electronic messaging boards on the streets, and they really provided a lot of the manual labor that we needed, moving those tables and cleaning out the bathrooms and things like that. That's what Public Works does, and they did those things for us. And then the police managed the clinic crowds, the traffic, and the parking. So by working with all of these non-traditional partners, we were able to really be very, very successful in our HIV, in our H1N1 vaccine campaign. Next slide. So human resources was very, very important. Obviously, you know that you got to bring folks on and do different things. And that process, you know, can take 100 years, it seems like. Well, we had to expedite those processes, and so we spoke to human resources. When it came to an H1N1 human resource that we needed, they pushed that to the forefront so we can get it in. And aging was extraordinarily helpful. They deal with our senior centers. We were able to use the senior centers for our clinics, and then they helped us recruit the volunteers. The aging department, that's what they do. They have a lot of the seniors who are volunteers for a lot of different things. Well, they were doing it already, so we didn't have to go out and look for volunteers. We can just say to the aging, we need 20 volunteers for our clinic. And guess what? They sent them. Next slide. So we had a wonderful, successful program. We actually now probably give out close to 55,000 H1N1 vaccines in this past season. We held over 70 H1N1 vaccine clinics, and we enlisted almost 20-plus community partnerships to be able to do that. So when we're mobilizing non-traditional partners, it is IDEAL, I-D-E-A-L. And this is what I want you to bring home. I, identify your potential partners early on. D, determine with your partners the terms of that partnership. E, educate, and what's very important is update your partners on their role and what the master plan is. Let them be involved. Tell them what's going on. A, activate an ongoing assessment of the plan. You got to activate that plan and you have to have an assessment of that plan. And then L is your lessons learned. Compile those lessons learned. And that's the thing we want to bring home. Mobilizing your non-traditional partners is IDEAL, I-D-E-A-L. Next slide. So think big when you identify your potential partners. Don't think small. Think big. Just kind of ask them, what can you do for me? You're a part of this whole process too. Talk to your staff and stuff like that. Work backwards. I always say begin with the end in mind. If I'm going somewhere and I have to ask you for directions, the first thing you're going to ask me is what? Where are you going? That's the first thing you're going to ask me. And the second question you're going to ask me is, where are you now? You need to know those two things. So work backwards. So know where you want to go and then work backwards, and then you can figure out how you're going to get there. And then solicit input from your staff and traditional partners. It is eye-opening when you just talk to the staff and ask them, and you say to them, I need to do this. How can I get there? And they have some really interesting thoughts and ideas. And so I think it's important to be able to identify your potential partners, but really talk to your staff. Next slide. Determine the terms of the partnership. So present the overall plan, solicit feedback, and discuss and agree on who will be involved from each agency partner. Okay. So you want to know who's going to be involved. What does the partnership entail? When will a partner be needed? Where will their contribution be needed? And how long will a partnership last? You want to be able to identify those things. Next slide. Educate and update, very, very important. Continue to update your partners. Let them know how wonderful they are and let them know where you are in the process. It's extraordinarily important, and keep them abreast of what is going on with the crisis itself. Next slide. Activate and assess the plan. You want to implement your plan, do an assessment of your plan, and then you want to assess and monitor your partners. You really want to continue to do that, because when you don't do that, they feel almost left out, as if they're useless. And so you really want to make sure to keep them engaged. Next slide. So your lessons learned. Record and solicit lessons learned throughout the response. Compile those lessons learned and then share the lessons learned with your partners. Utilize your lessons learned for future programs and responses, and then encourage your partners to implement those lessons learned. Next slide. So some of the successes, the countywide buy-in to our All Hands on Deck. For Maryland, we were the number one county giving out the most H1N1 vaccines for Baltimore County. commendations from the public and partners. Our partners and our public were very, very impressed with what we were able to do. Even though we had times, we had clinics where we gave 5,000 vaccines in a matter of 6 hours. And people were extraordinarily impressed. There's a point in time that we were up to 1,500 to 1,700 people per hour that we were getting through that line. People were very, very impressed with that. They had to spend more time in the traffic to get to the site than it would be for them to stay online to get their vaccine shot. Let's go to the next slide. So our challenge is keeping the partners informed of new and late-breaking developments, always very, very important, especially with your constituents, but also your partners. People want to feel as if they are in the know. Integrate the priorities of partner agencies and then learning and adhering to the chain of command of partner agencies. That's a big challenge because what happens is the fact that sometimes you tend to want to kind of go to the person that you really know. And that's not the way to do that. You really need to go to the top and bring it on down. Let's go to that next slide. So lessons learned. Support from county leaders is critical to the spirit of the partnership. So always get your county leaders involved. Engage your partners early. Identify one or two contacts to streamline the information sharing. And it's got to be the right contact. Stay in touch with them. Be flexible. Be prepared to make decisions quickly. Recognize your partners, and then reciprocate. And I will say to you one of the most important lessons I've learned, and I'm going to end at this particular time, and that is, if you get the ability to do it, feed your partner. Because if you feed them, they really feel a part of your group. So if you are having a huge H1N1 vaccine, you're doing it all day long, and you do it from 9 in the morning to 8 at night, and you're feeding your staff, make sure that you include your partners in that lunch and that dinner, because they really want to be a part of your group. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Thank you, Dr. Branch and Christine. I'd like to now open it up for questions or comments or challenges anyone would like to share about their experiences with partnerships and H1N1. So please, there's a mic in the center. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Ostie, Las Vegas, Nevada, for the panel. I did hear about call centers, and I'd like a little more information from both of you about challenges with call centers, and then I'd like to make a comment.
But with the call centers, because we had the 211 call centers that handled a lot of the questions, and honestly, I didn't play a large part in that, but I know that one of the challenges was that they were getting a lot of clinical questions or questions that they couldn't necessarily answer. So I think that was one of the challenges with it. But honestly, beyond that, I didn't really work with them all that much.
From our perspective, the issues that we had were infrastructure issues. What happens is that we were ready with approximately 6 people to answer a hotline phone. When H1N1 hit, we probably needed 40. So we didn't have the room and the telephone lines to actually answer those phones. That was the first. The second was our actual phone themselves. Our phones did not roll over and did not have the capacity to do some of the more technological things that needed to be done, by putting someone in hold, and if they're in hold too long, not dropping the call and things like that. So we had those particular issues, and we were able to resolve a lot of those. And we're working on those by changing the room and being able to get more lines and changing the telephone system and things like that. One of the challenging things that I think we overcame was who you put in the call center. So obviously, you would love to be able to have clinical people, but when you're talking about 30 and 40 people, you may not have 30 or 40 clinical people. So we had a structure by which we clearly had a very experienced nurse who was supervising the center itself. And then we had our frequently asked questions, and they would go directly from what we had written down in their script. And if they had any questions, there was a nurse that was there. And if that nurse had any questions, there was a physician that he or she could call. So we were able to get around that, but that is a challenging piece to a call center.
I'd like to suggest that there is an alternative partnership. It's a non-traditional partnership. Las Vegas has been using a poison control center for the last 10 years. And we found our partnership with them to be very, very beneficial during a Hep C outbreak that we had a couple years ago. And with flu, it was a natural transition to use them for that as well. In fact, we've now convinced our entire state to use Poison Control Center. We had almost 250,000 calls. We handled them with very little problems. They are professionals. They do handle medical calls all the time. We wrote the scripts for them through the FAQs, and we found that they have a very high standard of quality assurance. So when you're thinking about a large influx of calls in a surge, that's another alternative that you might turn to.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I guess since I'm up here, I get to ask questions too. So I know both of you guys talked about expanding partnerships, and it sounds like both of you had great success in doing that, and it was centered around this one crisis this past season. Well, it's not really over, but how are you planning to keep those partners at the table, and do you have plans to sort of think about the upcoming flu season?
Okay. Well, we are going to have a program at the end of this season in which we're going to be getting our partners back together again and doing a debriefing, so letting them know exactly, you know, all the things that we have done and the successes that we've had. I am very fortunate in that I'm in Baltimore County, where we have an excellent communication within the local jurisdiction. And so prior to this, we were able to communicate very well. And I think that this brought the relationships closer together, and we'll be able to maintain and sustain those relatively easily because we had an excellent working relationship prior to.
And I just have to echo that we really developed great, great partnerships, and a lot of them were ones that we already had in place, but also that we expanded upon. And just, I think a lot of people realized how important H1N1 vaccination was and how that works with seasonal flu vaccination. So just even awareness and realizing the organizations and what we have in place and continuing communication with them and partnerships with them is what we plan on doing.
So are you still sending out those emails, and are you still getting responses back from them?
I am, and I still send out the newsletter weekly and compile all the information, so we'll continue to do that too.
All right, great. Thank you. Are there other states or local health departments or nonprofits who want to share information or experiences they might have had in bringing non-traditional partners on board and use this as?
Hello, my name is Cynthia Williams. I work at the Pentagon. This was a very challenging year for us this year because this is the first time that we've had to use, we get a lot of vaccine from the military. Mm-hmm. We've had to get vaccine this year from the states. Me being at the Pentagon, I had to work with Maryland, Virginia, and DC. What was challenging was that everyone does things differently. Mm-hmm. Everyone different forms. So it was hard to get the vaccine. We had to order the vaccine for the civilians through the states. Usually where I work, we only do military. For the flu season, we do DOD civilians, but this year, H1N1, everyone got a shot. So it was pretty hard getting from the states. I must say that Maryland was the first one I received, but actually was the only one that I received vaccine from for the civilians. It's kind of hard to get it out to them that even though we are a government facility, we have so many civilians that work, that live in your states that we're trying to cover. So I don't have a question. It would be nice to have one way of ordering, say, I work here, but I want to order for this, this, and this clinic, because I have four clinics that fall under my clinic that I have to order from. So that means I have to order for, like I said, Virginia, Maryland, and DC.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Does anybody else want to share any information? All right. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and our speakers and Dr. Branch. I don't know if you were going to entertain us with a song,
okay.
As promised.